Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from language creators and the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in to get the inspiration you need to bring in new technologies or gain extra evidence to support your software development plan.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to GoTo Book Club. I'm Samia Rahman, currently working as the Director of Data and AI at Seagen. It's a biotechnology company where we're looking to develop innovative targeted therapies to better the lives of cancer patients. I like to solve complex problems leveraging data, and our book today is Data Mesh. And I'm super excited to talk to the founder and author of Data Mesh today. I had the privilege to work with her just when the first article in the topic was published back in May 2019 and apply the principles in highly complex domains in large enterprises. So welcome, Jamak. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Samia. It's great to see you. You have definitely been, you know, working with you has been some of the highlights of my work, especially when we were just, you know, creating this concept, and you were building it, right, in one of our clients. And I remember those whiteboard sessions and workshops together to figure out even how to create a language around this. So I'm excited to be here and talking to you about this. So I work as the director of emerging technologies for ThoughtWorks in North America. But that's my day job. My night job is evangelizing and refining and applying the concept of data mesh globally. I'm excited here to talk about that.
Yeah, awesome. So I think to introduce the topic to the audience for people who haven't known about the topic, can you just tell us what it means? How did it come about to be? And we can take it from there.
Sure. I think, data mesh, the problem it's trying to solve is giving us new ways, a new approach to be able to get value from data for AI and ML and analytics responsibly, right? So I think that the it's a socio-technical approach. It's an approach that considers both architecture and, you know, how we decompose and recompose the components of a data management system at scale, and also people. The roles and responsibility and accountabilities and the structure, the working structure and processes of people, so that we can responsibly share data in a way that, you can really use it for AI and ML. And its heart is a decentralized approach. So how it differentiates, I guess we have had many different approaches in the past to get data in a shape and form that is usable for analytics and AI, which is different from doing applications and transactions, and we've had many of those architectures in the past, and it's different so that in a way that it decentralizes both the architecture and the accountability, people and roles and responsibilities. So that's the problem it's trying to solve. How it's trying to solve it, I think we're still refining the details of that, but at its core, it's based on kind of four principles that needs to be applied together. It's not that you can pick and choose, I'm just going to do data as a product. It's like four complementary principles. And they are around making sure that the data sharing and data also usage is really embedded into domains of an organization. And domain is basically an area of concern for business, right? With a specific outcome, a specific language, a specific tasks. So it brings the responsibility and also architecture and decentralizes around this concept of domains. It creates a new language around what we call data. Data in data mesh is no longer just bits and bytes on disks. So it creates a language around data as a product, which is a combination of all of the elements around a particular set of data or a concern of data around the domain data that make that data trustworthy, longstanding, reliable, timely, and also usable. Again, usable for analytical use cases. And this is really important because and we call this data as a product, but this is very important because analytical use cases can't just go to one database and, you know, one area of business and create insights. They would really require connecting and stitching and correlating information across data that comes from many different domains. So data as a product tries to create this new notion of exchanging data as units of value that contains everything, all the structured components to make that data usable and trustworthy, discoverable for analytical use cases. So this second pillar, data as a product. And the third pillar is, okay, how do we make all of this feasible, right? How is it possible that we can essentially own and be accountable for data and essentially like produce data as a product or consume data as a product? And it's really the element of self-serve platform, and in a way that it caters both for the diversity of these domains and teams and yet harmony that would require for composing data across the teams, and also a kind of a platform that increases the level of abstraction to reduce the cognitive load for everyone to be a data developer, right? Data user. So really reduce the complexity that we see with our platforms today. So that's self-serve platform is the third pillar. And the last pillar is around addressing kind of all of the quality and security and harmonization concern, all of these cross-cutting concerns that we traditionally put under the umbrella of governance in a way that it is practical, right? In a way that the governance doesn't get in a way of moving fast and being innovative, right? So it's called kind of federated computational governance, which touches on both operating model as well as technology to implement cross-cutting concerns around all of these data products in a computational and automated fashion. So that's just make everything to really come together at the end. That's the long definition of kind of its principles and why we yet need another decentralized approach to managing data.
Wow, that was awesome. I think there's so many parts of that resonate with me, from the project we did together to what I'm doing right now at work. I think my favorite word in the first sentence of your definition is socio-technical approach. I think that's so key in how we deliver rapidly. How did you structure your book? And how do you manage people who question decentralization? I think that's a very common challenge a lot of us have when we go into orgs and convincing that, hey, decentralization does give us value.
Yes, absolutely. I think we can unpack those, maybe answer those as two separate questions. So if I forget to answer your second question, please remind me. But in terms of structuring the book, I guess the motivation behind the book was this is a new concept, right? It's only a few years old. I guess a lot of its principles has been around forever and ever. Like it's been around, the principles are not so new. They're just principles that I personally saw working over the last, you know, 10, 15 years in distribution and decentralization of applications and APIs and trying to kind of bring that to the world of data. So even though we've seen these principles at work and in practice in adjacent kind of operational systems, but they are new to the data people or the data world. So because it's a new concept, I wrote this book probably a little bit earlier than I would have liked to. I would have liked to write this book, you know, 5-7 years down the track when we have many successful cases and, you know, we can point to all of those finished case studies and so on. But it was necessary to write this book even at, you know, 3 years down the track, because the industry showed such a strong interest in the topic. Like, it was beyond my imagination. I mean, my imagination was I'm going to go talk at this conference and then I will get attacked and then I would, you know, come back home and shut up for the rest of my life. But it was just I pointed to the problems and perhaps solutions that people had seen and had resonated. So industry spoke, and, you know, and then the vendors had to respond, and suddenly every other vendor kind of had their products repurposed for data mesh. A lot of people came out and said, we're kind of already doing it. So it was, I was really overwhelmed that, wow, there's really a need. And as you can imagine, in any situation like that, there is misconception, there is opportunists that take it a different direction for their own personal benefits and gain. So I felt it was necessary to have a body of work that was not only establishing why we did it, what it is, also establishing what's missing, right? What are the hard problems we have to solve, to answering your second question, to those, you know, doubts around decentralization. I mean, decentralization is not for free. It's very expensive, and you have to, at the engineering and infrastructure level, you have to do a lot of work to make it work. So we can talk to that in a minute. So the reason I wrote the book was first and foremost, like, establish what it is before, you know, the industry takes it and percolates it to something unrecognizable a few years down the track. So there is somewhere to come back to. So as you can imagine, the first part of the book is structured as what it is, like, what is it at the principle level, but without me becoming too descriptive so that we can kill the innovation around it, right? That the purpose is, like, be open enough, but also closed enough so that you can allow refinement and creative creation behind it after it, but yet be cognizant of, like, the boundaries of it, right? So that's the first part of the book, what it is. And again, I've structured what it is based on the pillars. But before I even start the book in the prologue, and I highly encourage the readers to read that small chapter, I tell a little story for us to imagine, if we did have data mesh in place, where is it that we want to get to? So there's a bit of a storytelling, putting data mesh into kind of in an environment, in a kind of hypothetical environment, and showing what is possible. So then once we establish that, I feel it's really important to say why we're even talking about this. Like, what are the macro environmental drivers that are getting us to the point that at this inflection point that we have two choices: either continue doing what we're doing, spend more money, get plateau of result, or really pivot and change not everything, but change some of those key elements that haven't changed for a long time, and hopefully go to new heights. So then the second part of the book is around why we're doing data mesh. So again, I think it's really funny, even within our own company, I sometimes get into discussions and people, like, because we get into solutioning, how we're going to build it and how we're going to wire these data products. But people, when I zoom back and I look at, some of the patterns of behavior that I see, some of the patterns of how organizations try to apply this, it's actually counter to why we should be doing this. We get into the what and how and forget why, and then the hows are completely misaligned as why we're doing this thing. So the second part of the book is really describing the environmental organizational drivers that require something like data mesh, describing the benefits and objectives that you're trying to achieve, like giving you those litmus tests that, am I actually getting toward this objective, or am I getting away despite all of this fancy technology I'm building? We are both technologists, so we get excited about tech and solutioning, but we have to have a litmus test to know why, and what are those objectives, and are we getting closer to them? So that's kind of the second part of the book. And then this third part of the book is around how, third and fourth, in fact, again, I'm an architect, I'm a technologist. So two parts of the book are dedicated to architecture. And again, I talk about architecture at a very high level. I don't talk about, you know, buy this tech or use that open source, because those things will change and evolve. But it gives some enough of the guideline for people to see how technology that exists today will fit into that architecture. So the third part of the book is like kind of the overall architecture. What do we mean by multi-plane data infrastructure? What do we mean with computational policies? What do we mean by data product? What do we mean by, you know, the inputs and outputs and discoverability? So it talks about a decentralized kind of distributed architecture for that. And again, in that section, I try to be thoughtful of the fact that we're early in the days. I don't know how many times I apologize in the book that we are still early, guys. Like, this is just a starting point. Don't take this and just, you know, implement it. Assume that this is the target state. But again, I was trying to show a way, an approach to how to architect this, as opposed to here's our blueprint, go and copy it. Although there is some of that, but So then, you know, I put myself in the shoes of, you know, a data user, a data analyst, a data scientist, a data developer, looking, and you and I have done this work together. You have done this work, in fact, and I draw some from some of your work that what does that journey look like? And then thinking about abstraction of complexity from that journey, what are the APIs of a platform? Again, what are the APIs and interfaces? Not the mechanics underneath it, but just what experiences we expect to create for these folks with the platform. So that's kind of part three. And then part four, because data product, or the more geeky name I sometimes use, is data quantum, is just such a core, in my opinion, is such a core ingredient of this architecture that we must get right, that I go through quite a lot of chapters around all of these capabilities that now, once we have been implementing in a centralized way, like discovery and catalog and observability, and then we had like, you know, messy pipelines underneath, and then we had storage beneath that, how do we still need to have some of those affordances, but in a very decentralized way with these co-equal nodes of data quantums sharing data across each other, referencing each other's schemas and so on. So I go through the details of like how to think about the design of your data product as an architectural quantum in these architectures. That's part four of the book. And then I couldn't really leave people right then, because majority of the questions are around organization. Like, how do I get started? Again, I was very cognizant of the fact that what does that multi-year transformation journey for a large organization look like? And we don't really know that. We haven't done many of these cases to generalize patterns and say, this is what it looks like. But I give enough tools to leaders, to managers, to executives, to people who are influencing this transformation journey to use to really both map out what could an adoption of a new innovation in an organization look like, and how to think about these milestones of adoption. And we can go through some of these details of that later, but also give some tools around measuring and monitoring. What is it that we should measure as the measure of success? And again, those are just starting points. We still have to discover which of those are the right ones or not. And also I talk about the organizational structure, and I really draw a lot from the work of team topologies, and you're familiar with that. We did that at one of the clients we were together to see what are the team structures. And again, this is a starting point. Even on the project you and I were together, the team grew quite rapidly, and we restructured ourselves so many times, right? But some of the elements remain constant or remain to prove relevant over time. So I just extracted kind of some of those elements back into the book on the organizational structure and culture and incentives and like the things about people that we should care about every time we talk about such a shift. So it's why, how technically, how from execution strategy, and how from organization. It's not for the lighthearted, I should say. It can turn out to be quite a large body of work.
There's just so much there that reminds me of the past, as well as capturing everything we've learned along the way. To me, it's the recipe book right now for how you can start adopting and start incrementally and get to that North Star. I love the entire structure because I can give it to people I work with to kind of adopt those things and then try it out incrementally. So thank you so much for the book and all the things you put thoughts into.
You're one of the first people I acknowledged in the book who are contributing to.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Yes, I think you had a very key part in just, you know, brainstorming, refining, implementing some of these concepts, evangelizing within an environment that was completely, unaware of this concept, and bringing these new concepts to the folks on the ground. So yes, you please don't forget what a key role you've had yourself.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come. I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Thank you so much. I guess I'll ask a question for the audience here. Who does this book apply to? I don't want to give the answer. I have my own opinion, but I'd love to hear from you. Who should be reading the book over here?
Yes. So that's a tricky part because it is, it takes a village or maybe the whole organization to build data mesh. It's this, and this book is really try to stay at the breadth, not so much, even though I go into the depths in many areas, but it tries to incentivize, mobilize, and support a whole multidisciplinary team that is going to make data mesh real in an organization. And because that's the mission, one of the, I guess, objectives behind it, that multidisciplinary team has a lot of different roles in it. So this book is for people who are at the, not all of the content, but some of the content. And I give, at the beginning of the book, when I introduce the chapters, I introduce who gets most out of this chapter and what are the chapters. It's for everyone to read. Even if you want to talk about data mesh, you must read these chapters. But some of the chapters might be more optional, or you can just browse through them if you're in a different role. So those roles are, you know, people who are in influential management or executive places where you are influencing the direction and even decisions around data mesh, whether we should do it, whether we shouldn't do it, how much budget we should give it. Like, so some of those decision makers will definitely get a lot of benefit from both the introductory material at the beginning so that you are informed when people talk about data mesh, but also you have some guidance around how to go about executing this and making decisions around it and mobilizing your people. So portion of the book is suitable for them. The other role in that multidisciplinary is, of course, architects and technical leads and, you know, kind of solution developers. So again, if you are a developer and right now you are assessing a very specific tool, how do I use this particular, you know, technology, that this book is not going to give you the answer you're looking for. But if you are, you know, someone in a technical leadership position, in an architect position, that you are influencing the direction of the technology and the architecture for the technology, definitely this book for you. So introductory material, must read, and then you go through more of the technical hows, chapter part 3 and part 4. If you're a member of governance, or you're going to be, and you're trying to get your head around the operating model and different, very different thing, approach to governance, and you're worried about the security of the data and compliance and legal, and then you're also worried about, oh, holy, you know, S, now I have to give, you know, this responsibility out to the teams themselves, and you really want to be participating in structuring a new operation of governance and be also be participating in creation of the policies as code that we need for our data, definitely there are sections for you. Did I miss anybody else? I would say basically, if you're in an operational role in that team, governance role, technology role, this book is for you. If you are a, let's say, a hands-on data engineer, and right now you're building a data mesh, I think you definitely get from the architecture part, like the language that data mesh uses, and you and I developed some of that language together. So you can definitely get benefit, but it's it would be just to get you started and help your thinking. It's not a command line, you know, or a code that you can just copy and paste. It's not at that level. But I do have some, I go deep on some areas like schema definition, like how to, what are the existing patterns and what we can learn and what we can just leave behind perhaps, or what we can question. So yes, the technologies definitely can benefit. But again, assumption was that this is not a one man's job. This is teamwork to make it possible. Yes. There are many different roles, yes, in this team, and this book is for the team to make data mesh real.
Yeah, I think I like to sum it up with, it brings the people, process, and technology together, and you have chapters for each persona that needs to build or consume the various things to make value out of data. I guess we can maybe talk a little bit about each of the principles a bit. Let's talk about the first principle around domain-oriented ownership, and then your second principle, data as product. I see those as must-haves. There's no way out, especially in complex landscapes. What would you say the audience should take away from that, or what would be that key call for action for them?
Yeah, so a side effect of those two principles is that we're bringing app developers, people who are working on operational systems, closer to data. And we're bringing business and technology and data close together. We are trying to remove one of the last standing walls in our organizations between data and non-data. So I think the call to action is that if you are part of the technology team and building solutions, first and foremost, I assume that you are aligned as a long-standing technology team with a business function. If you're not, and if you are, you know, a traditional organization with a, you know, giant enterprise IT department where people just move around and you have devs that build and then you throw them to ops that maintain all of the devs that they have built, and there's no long-standing accountability and alignment with your business, there's no action for you. Like, wait a few years or wait until your organization has moved to a space where the IT department or technology teams have organized themselves to business. And to be honest, I've been working with enterprises now for over 10 years with ThoughtWorks, and many of the enterprises are in that place already. That's kind of been the trend with digital transformation and bringing tech to the core of the organizations. Of course, there are still enterprises that, or organizations that see tech not at a core, as a core component of the business. They just see that, okay, there's a solution that I'm going to buy and I just, you know, hire a bunch of integrator consultants to integrate them together. I don't have the ownership of that technology. I don't have a technology product owner internally. So those companies, I think they're going to have difficulty to get to data mesh. Just based assumptions. But if you're an organization that have the tech and business alignment, and again, give an example of like retail, because we are all kind of familiar with it, like you have teams, even in your IT department, that are really focused on the best experience of e-commerce, and you have the e-commerce folks in your brands that focus on digital channels and digital touch points. So you might have that team already, and you might have a team that's focusing on retail and the shops, and maybe a team on the point of sales tooling, and a team on order management and customer and so on. If you already have that technology team, let's now, and maybe on the other side of the organization, you had all of these data people, what data domain oriented kind of ownership does say, let's bring the data ownership back to these domains. So now you have tech, app, you know, biz, dev, data, and analytics right then and there. So now the people who are thinking about the best e-commerce experience, there are people from the, you know, data with data responsibilities, like data product owner, data developer, that are thinking about how the data that we're generating as a byproduct of running this application can fuel insights, can train machine learning, so that not only we in the e-commerce can personalize the experience, but the guys in the order management can also see maybe the problems, the portion of the orders from online versus the portion of reorders from retail. And, you know, the sales can use that information and combine that with orders and, you know, success of the orders, and the sales and marketing can use that. So the first action is find your technology business aligned domains that are most conducive to be able to now generate and share, and also use that analytical data for augmenting their own experiences with kind of analytics and ML, and locate those and start bridging that gap And as you do that, then you need to have a new architecture, new components for sharing and so on. And that's as part of that, then think about the data as a product. So the data as a product could be really your kind of the language that we built together, like this native or raw or source aligned data, which is the kind of the data that is being generated as part of customers maybe interacting with the e-commerce website. So it could be, you know, the history or the events of all of the customers of all of the countries and all of the regions that have interacted with the website. So it could be that, but provided as a reusable component, and it has contracts, so it can change without breaking all of the downstream. It has specific APIs, a specific code allocated there in that data product that keeps modifying and updating, that the data is not stale. Data product is actually a very active ingredient. It's like a data service almost for your architecture. So start building those, but not just for the sake of like having many data products, for the reason of using that data product to actually generate some value, right? Generate value in terms of new insights and learnings, or generate value in terms of new ML-driven data products that are, you know, generating kind of new classification of the customers or personalization cohorts and so on, so that you can act data that you can act upon and either change your application, because people seem to be quitting the shopping cart, or change the services that you provide, however you want to take action. So start thinking about what are these data products, how do I want to create it? And then while you do that, I think the two other ingredients, the two other pillars, again, are indispensable. Like, you cannot just do that and not think about, okay, what is the platform that makes it so easy for people to create data products that have some level of standardization, so they can talk to each other, right? So you start kind of building your platform, and again, you can prioritize, for example, supporting some consistent set of APIs around your data product, or you can prioritize bootstrapping these data products. I mean, it depends where you are. You can prioritize what the capabilities of the platforms are. And then from that day one, you need to bring the accountability for that data ownership and even governance concerns into the domains, and have domains, at least even you're doing with two domains, have them be part of a global kind of governance body, so that they can have both local incentive to build these amazing data products and enable insights, but also have these global incentives that these data products must be interoperable, must be secure. They cannot, you know, kind of compromise privacy, so that those folks with subject matter experts, like people understand legal, people understand security, and with collaboration with platform can figure out, okay, what are the parts of the data products we need to standardize and have policy as code around security? And then rinse and repeat, right? Do this with one domain and another and another. And there's just, you go through this kind of S-curve of adoption with exploration at the beginning and figuring out some of the sensible defaults, and then get ready for the expanse, because once you're successful in showing value in one or two places and other people want to, you know, and you do a good marketing job within the organization, good enablements within the organization, be ready for expand. And I think you remember that, like, when we were part of the platform team as this particular client, like, our, you know, executive would say, we have people from domains knocking at our door, want to use the platform. We've got to get ready for that expansion. So you go through that expansion phase where you can really unleash the capabilities and the sensible default practices and so on across the organization. And then you get to a point that you say, okay, for this situation we're in, like at this point in time, with this technology, with these domains that we have reached a phase of like extracting value now from many reusable data products that we have, and from many of the features of the platform. And then this S-curve, of course, keep repeating itself as the environment changes. So I guess just to wrap up, I think just be super pragmatic. Have your eye on where you want to get to, that expansion and extraction and exploiting this, and Kent Beck puts this as elegantly as 3X kind of phases of any sort of technology product development. But be pragmatic as, what do I need to do to get started with one domain? Who are the best domains to get started with? And don't compromise. There are things that I think I will be creating probably something, some more content around, even if you get started, the things that you cannot leave out early on. Like there's many things you can leave out, but you can't say, look, I'm not going to think about governance and I'm not going to think about the source teams. I'm just going to fix the middle, the data team.
Yeah.
Well, what you're going to get is a pretty expensive, overly engineered, decentralized data team. You will still have bottlenecks. So have that thin slice end-to-end across all of the pillars, even if it's a tiny use case and a tiny thin slice, but it goes across all of the pillars and touches all of them.
Yeah, that fully resonates with me. I think I've heard things like build the earliest explorable data product and the MVP, it must go to production. I think a lot of people forget about that it has to go with the security, trust, etc. Then you can go into those later stages of reusability and even deriving further insights out of those core explorable data sets.
And I think there's something there, Simon, and you were part of this, so you can probably speak to this, that today or traditionally, unlike actually perhaps operational teams where open source is so prevalent and it's so easy for us to get started with things, you know, as developers, everything can be pushed down to grassroots developers. Data initiatives are big and kind of ominous and have to have this like multi-year plan of all of these multi-million dollar purchases and partnerships of 7 years. And it's just like so scary to even get started, right? And predominantly it's been driven by which vendor I'm going to buy or go into partnership, right? Heavily, heavily vendor-driven approaches. So like, for example, data discoverability and explorability, as you said, it's like a key feature of a mesh. Like, I mean, you need to have a window into your mesh of data products. But I would say, like, people get started, say, okay, what big expensive data catalog I need to buy? And it's a data catalog space right now. It's like exploding, right? And you and I, like, we started with the simplest data catalog and it was fine. Like, we wrote it. You can tell me what we wrote, right? So,
I think we used Marquez or something. It's an open source framework. But it can be very lightweight. Tribal knowledge for those first set of data products in an Excel sheet, that works great. That's your data catalog. Put it in a SharePoint. People can find it. You can crowdsource it. As you start scaling and that tipping point happens, let's say more than 10, that's when you assess which tool fits the way you operate. I think there's a general shift I'm observing that people are being mindful of what are their criteria and then pick the technology over technology first. So there's a bit of a pushback from organizations and vendors these days in terms of, no, I want to first see if this really works in the way I want to deliver quality in a rapid manner. So I think the technology and the tooling out there, they're also having to shift their way of delivering things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to be an interesting few years because, you know, the vendors can't overnight shift their strategy. Like they've been working for almost some of them decades, some of them years around a particular division of responsibility in the organization, around the particular meaning of the data. Data was like this passive stuff that we dumped into lake or warehouse. And now we had to have all these layers on top of all of that data to build meaning out of it. And that's changing with data mesh. That completely reverses with data mesh. As in, data is active. Data, those tables or streams or, you know, files will have all of the other ancillary kind of components around them, their APIs, their metadata, their policy engines, everything that right then and there in an isolated, autonomous way, they can, you know, they can maintain that data, they can share it and make it actually usable. So then this need for this heavy duty after the fact come and overlay metadata, come and overlay knowledge, like those tools need to shift so that they can be part, they can allow emergence of knowledge and emergence. So they become search tools,
exactly.
Right? Index is like you know, but they become the Google search. So, while we're going through this transitional phase of moving from the old way of doing things to the new ways, technologies, I would suggest, like, people picking technologies are the most adaptive to this reconfiguration and repurpose. So the technologies, as you said, that they come with, this is the way that the technology will impose the way you work. You're going to spend a lot of time and a lot of money to integrate that into a mesh configuration, and perhaps that become a blocker for your actual, you know, rapid development of data mesh.
Yeah, I think I just want to highlight one part of the book that I really love is this notion of a data product that really lines up with how FAIR calls for life sciences and healthcare advancement. You need to build out these data products that are interoperable, trustworthy, et cetera. And I was just yesterday listening in on a webinar that the Pistoia Alliance did. I think I got that right. They're a nonprofit where some of the pharma companies came together to talk about be pragmatic and build it from that bottom up, incrementally build that ontology with the data in mind, as opposed to let's get all the data out there, then build all the old pattern of layer by layer waterfall delivery no longer works. People need to shift into that agile way of, and I think data mesh really, the frame of the product, all of that really enables us to shift into that agile model of delivery as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the concerns shift left, right?
Shift left
to the beginning of a life cycle of a data product, not its end. And the beginning could be right from the team that is generating the data or the team that is consuming and generating new sets of aggregates and insight. Yeah. So it's really the beginning of a life cycle of your data, whether it's your data is aligned to the source application, or whether your data is an aggregate, or whether your data is newly, you know, machine learning model generated, you know, fit for purpose kind of data, whatever it is, it has a life cycle. And right from that beginning of life cycle, you're shifting left, quality, SLOs, metadata, all of that shifts left. And it's not once done and forgotten.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that data mesh really strives to solve is change. Change is constant. And if change is constant, and if everything constantly changing, as in new data arrives, new data gets processed, the schema of data changes, like if everything's constantly changing, we need to have a long-standing process for managing that change and long-standing owners who understand the destination and the past of this data product to continuously evolve it and change it. So shift left. And also end-to-end manage the life cycle of a data product.
Yeah. I guess I have one fun question before we end. I love the visual language in your book, and I found it resonates with a lot of people, especially people who come from enterprise architecture or the software development world, because of the hexagons is the icon I love. Can you share with the audience why that really helps even that visualization or the process by which people are developing things?
Yeah, I think the moral of the story is that you don't know what resonates with people until you experiment. So this, how it all started was that I gave this data mesh, presented data mesh first as a talk. And at the time, even I didn't have a name for it. I called it Beyond the Lake. We need something beyond the lake. And I just put this talk together in a hurry. I was coming from Australia, and you know, it was after the holidays, and so I didn't have really a lot of time to sit down and use visual tools to kind of put a nice neat boxes and lines together. So I just used this app called Paper on iPad with iPad Pencil, and I drew them. Drawing helps me also try to clarify some of these really complex concepts visually. I'm a very visual person. I learn visually, and I learn by listening better than kind of reading. I guess reading is last for me. So it was also helping me to kind of clarify my own thinking. So I put this hand-drawn diagram together, and I went to the talk, and it didn't matter. It wasn't so fancy. So it was a hand-drawn diagrams. And then After that, we thought about, okay, let's publish this as a written content. So I continued with this hand drawing. And then I told Martin, like, can you give me some more time? I need to turn these diagrams to properly, you know, boxes and hexagons and so on, use, I don't know, a graphical tool. And then he said, it's actually fine. It's just fine. Just publish it as is. And again, to my surprise, a lot of people came back and said they really like that human, flawed, squiggly, kind of imperfect, I suppose, lines. And it was great because it made they brought down the workload and the cost, I suppose, for generating those diagrams. I would just like draw them and then I threw them to preview and I, you know, make them transparent and then add them to the book. And then with O'Reilly Publishing, they were kind enough to allow me to just publish those. It became kind of a data mesh brand, I guess, over time. So yeah. The learning was like, do the easiest, simplest thing, throw it out there, get feedback, and maybe that's good enough. And maybe you can just do some improvements. But I must apologize for people who will be buying the print version of the book. When I drew these diagrams, I wasn't thinking that it will be used in a gray scale. I had assumed it would be used in color. So colors have some meanings that I have now get lost in the black and white print version, or only does black and white only. Maybe in future we will have second revision in color, but for now it's black and white. I have, of course, compensated with text and labels wherever color had a meaning. So, for example, I used the color blue, but of course, as a way of saying, okay, these are the standard part of the platforms you're using in your data products. But now I've made sure that I label so people who maybe can't see full spectrum of the color, or that they're just using the print version in grayscale. So information is not lost, but it's not also super pretty in grayscale, because I just didn't know that was going to be the case when I first drew them.
Well, thank you so much. I had an amazing time talking to you, and I hope the audience goes and gets this book, reads about it. I will strongly encourage all my friends. The recipe really brings success. I firmly believe in it. I'm doing it another round again. And I hope that we can get to that value that we need as quickly as possible. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, Jermak, for writing the book. I know it was a lot of effort. It's been a long journey for you to get it out there. So thanks a lot for that.
Thank you, Sami. Thank you for this conversation and being a partner. And I wish you all the best and success in your new role. And my mother personally uses targeted therapy for cancer, so it's close to my heart, and I'm really excited to see what magic you're going to create.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.